Count it a high joy and privilege to be with you this evening to be engaged in the worship of our Lord. We'd ask you to pray for us what time we stand before you. I'd like to draw your minds to the beginning place this evening, to the 23rd chapter of 2 Samuel. In 2 Samuel 23, we're going to pick up our thoughts on the series that we've been looking at in the lineage and the genealogy of Christ. The last effort we made on this is we were talking about Christ being the son of David, and we talked about David's time upon the throne, how the Lord blessed him, how the Lord gave him some covenants, the Lord gave him some mercy, and the Lord made some promises to David that he didn't make to other men. He promised, and Jeremiah relays this promise in Jeremiah 13, that David would never want for a man to sit upon the throne. And even though David had problems, in all those problems, the Lord was merciful unto him, and he was merciful unto him for the covenants that he had made. And we kind of got to Solomon being on the throne and the peace that Solomon experienced and the joy that was during his time. And even though Solomon's reign ended poorly, that the Lord blessed the house of David with peace even after he was gone. I'd like to begin reading here in 2 Samuel 23, and it's our hope to begin here and end here. It says in verse 1, it says, "Now these be the last words of David. David, the son of Jesse, said, and the man who was raised up on high, the anointed of the God of Jacob, and the sweet psalmist of Israel said, the Spirit of the Lord spake by me, and his word was in my tongue. The God of Israel said, the rock of Israel spake to me, he that ruleth over men must be just, ruling in the fear of God, and he shall be as the light of the morning when the sun riseth, as on a morning without clouds, as the tender grass springing out of the earth by clear shining after rain. Although my house be not so with God, yet he hath made with me an everlasting covenant, ordered in all things, and sure, for this is all my salvation and all my desire, although he make it not to grow." The covenants that God made with David included a covenant that he would not only have a man to rule upon the throne, but also that even if his children went astray, even if his seed after him did not follow after the Lord, that because of the Lord's mercy to David and ultimately to Christ, he would not cut off that line. And David here admits that if somebody is going to rule over Israel, if somebody is going to rule over God's people, he must be just. He must be ruling in the fear of God. And David freely confesses. He said, "My house is not so with God." Even in David's own lifetime, he knew his house was not right with God in this sense. He had committed sins. His sons had committed sins. The kingdom had been in disarray on multiple occasions. He had not been successful in ruling over them as he should. And yet, the Lord gave him something in spite of his behavior and in spite of his house's behavior. Now, this evening, I'm going to very quickly go through about 13 or 14 generations in the line of David. As you recall, in Matthew 1, the line of David in Matthew, or the line of Christ in Matthew 1 is broken into three sections. Abraham to David was 14 generations. David to the carrying away into Babylon was 14 generations. And from the carrying away into Babylon to Christ is 14 generations. Now, there's not going to be a whole lot for me to say about those last 14 because there's not hardly any ink in Scripture dedicated to them. But those middle 14, there's a good bit of ink dedicated to them. And for the sake of time, if we're going to go through about 13 or 14 generations, I'm only going to get about 2 minutes on each person that we talk about. So if you promise to listen fast, I'll promise to try to preach really, really fast. In Matthew chapter 1, I'll begin talking from about verse 6. And it says, "And Jesse begat David the king, and David the king begat Solomon, and of Solomon, of her that had been the wife of Uriah. And Solomon begat Rehoboam, and Rehoboam begat Abiah, and Abiah begat Asa." If you look down past Solomon, we find that David's house immediately is in disarray. When Solomon dies and Rehoboam, as he's called in the Old Testament, takes the throne, Rehoboam is faced with a choice. The people come to him and they say, your father gave us very grievous burdens. We had to build his house. We had to build God's house. And we're ready for a time for our burden to be lighter. And Rehoboam doesn't follow this counsel. He follows after the counsel of young men that were raised up with him. And he adds to their burden. And the children of Israel revolt from under him. That's why when you read the book of Kings, you'll find that there were kings of Israel and kings of Judah. This is very important, and I need to make this point and move on. When Rehoboam lost the majority of the kingdom, when 10 tribes went with Jeroboam and they formed the nation of Israel, and Rehoboam was left with the land of Judah, those 10 tribes that revolted, they were from that day forward, even though Rehoboam was wrong, they were in idolatry from that point forward. Israel never had a good king. Jeroboam was bad, his son was bad, his son was bad, his son was bad, and for 4 generations of the house of Jeroboam, they were all bad. The kingdom was stripped from Jeroboam, given to another line, and every one of them were bad. You find Ahab was in this line of the kings of Israel, and he was bad, and they were all horrible, and Israel just one idolatrous king after another. But the reason it says that God did not take the entire kingdom away from Rehoboam is because of his promise that he made to David that he would give him a light and give him a man to rule upon his throne. And that's why Judah and the small tribe of Benjamin were left under the house of David and under his kingship. But Rehoboam lost the majority of the nation. And when they left, the nation was split from that day going forward. Then Rehoboam has a son. So Rehoboam wasn't all that good. And then you have Abijam, or in the Old Testament, he's called Abijah, who was Rehoboam's son, and he was not all that good. I mean, he was okay. The Lord blessed him on one occasion to slaughter 500,000 people in one battle, or his people did. But you find that shortly thereafter, he's looking to other things for confidence. So his reign was not all that good. And then his son was Asa. And for the very first time since David and then Solomon, you have a man sitting upon the throne who is called a good king. But notice that even in reading the Old Testament, reading 1st and 2nd Kings and 1st and 2nd Chronicles, and I encourage you all to do that, Asa was described as a king that did that which was right in the eyes of the Lord. But there's a caveat. It said, but not as his father David. In other words, he was a good king, but even he wasn't as righteous and good a king as David was. And we find out towards the end of his life why. Asa was a good king. He ruled well. And when he looked to the Lord blessed him. And yet, there came a point when after the Lord had prospered him and blessed him, that some enemies came that weren't nearly as big and as strong as enemies he'd already defeated. But instead of relying upon the Lord and calling upon the Lord, he calls to some of his neighbors and says, come over here and help me in battle, and I'll pay you money if you'll help me conquer this enemy. And the prophet tells him, because you didn't rely on the Lord, you're not going to be blessed. Even though when you relied upon him, the Lord blessed you. And then it came to a point pass that he was diseased in his feet, couldn't walk. And in the rest of his life, he was diseased in his feet, didn't ask the Lord to help him, didn't call upon the Lord, sought the physician's help. And for the rest of his life, he was diseased in his feet and he died kind of as a cripple. And so even his reign wasn't all that good. So we've gotten through Asa. And you go back to the genealogy, and in verse 8 it says, and Asa begat Jehoshaphat, and Jehoshaphat begat Joram, and Joram begat Ozias, and Ozias begat Jotham, and Jotham begat Achaz, and Achaz begat Ezekias. Now, notice the next son in this line. Asa's son is a man by the name of, and this calls him Jehoshaphat. In the Old Testament he was Jehoshaphat, and Jehoshaphat was known as a good king. But like his father, he was known as a good king, that which was right in the eyes of the Lord, but not as his father David. And I'm harping on this because I want to come back to it. If you'll bear with me, I've got to go through a lot of ground, and then we're going to start tying a bunch of points together. Jehoshaphat was a good king, but he had a problem. And his problem, namely, was this. He wanted people to like him. He wanted people to be his friend. And he was willing to be somebody's friend that he had no business being their friend just to make peace and just to get along with folks. Jehoshaphat was good friends with Ahab, king of Israel. Y'all all remember him. He had a very famous wife. Her name was Jezebel, and both of them were no good. Jehoshaphat had no business being around this couple at all. He had no business joining affinity to Ahab at all, but he did. And even though he was a good king, and even though the Lord blessed him, and he prospered in his reign, because of his affinity with Ahab, we're going to see that his house in the line of David was cursed for a long time because of what Jehoshaphat did. Are you getting the idea that even in this genealogy so far, about half the kings were no good, about the half the kings were okay, and even the kings that were okay had their own problems? Who was Jehoshaphat's son? It says, and Jehoshaphat begat Joram, and Joram begat Uzziah. Notice this son. His name is Joram here. He is called Jehoram in the Old Testament. Jehoram, or Joram, was one of the worst kings that Judah had. The reason he was one of the worst kings that Judah had is, guess who his father-in-law was? Ahab. He married Ahab's daughter because of the closeness that his father, Jehoshaphat, had with Ahab. You know, whenever you and I get too close to the world, I have to make this point before I move on. When we get too close to the world, you know what happens? It affects our children in ways we probably couldn't even begin to imagine. When we get close to the world, our children will be close to the world. And the closer our children are to the world, the more affinity they'll have for this world and the more attachment they'll have to this world. Joram was one who, his affinity with Ahab got him in trouble. He was a very wicked king. He was so idolatrous, he was so blind to the law of God, that not only did he do as bad as the kings of Israel did, he undid a lot of the things his father did. When his father destroyed idols and cut down groves, it says that he built them back up and built idols and worshipped them. So Jehoram was an absolutely horrible king. And Joram's son, was a man, Joram begat Uzziah. And Uzziah begat Jotham, and Jotham begat Ahaz. Now notice who Uzziah is. Uzziah here in the Old Testament was known by a couple of names. He was known either as Ahaziah, or in one place he's known as Uzziah. I believe in the book of Isaiah he's called Uzziah. In the book of 2 Kings he's called Ahaziah. And I believe in 1 Chronicles he's called Uzziah. But anyway, he had the second longest reign that any king in Judah had. He reigned for 52 years. And most of his reign was a good one. He was a good king. He was a wise king. He was one who called upon the Lord. He was also not as good as his father David. He didn't rule as well as David did. But he ruled very well until such a time that he decided it was time for him to do something that was not his business to do. He grabs a censer, he goes into the holy place, and he's about to make an offering on the altar. And as he goes in to make this offering on the altar, all the priests come and prevent him. And they say, O king, this is not your place. It's not your place as the king to be offering on the altar. And he tries to do it anyway, and it says that leprosy broke out from the censer that he had. And it lit upon his forehead, and it spread across his face. And he dwelt for the rest of his life in a several house, or in a leprous house, and it's probable that his son Jotham, or in the Old Testament Jotham, had to reign while his dad was in a leprous house. And this was a grief of mind to Isaiah, who was the prophet of Judah during that time. So much so that when Uzziah died in Isaiah chapter 6, the Lord appeared to Isaiah in a very special way to show him that even though your king has been a leper, even though your king is dead, even though that which you thought was good in this land that had been good for so very long, after all this bad kingship and all these bad reigns, you finally had a good king. Yeah, he made a mistake that cost him for the rest of his life, but he reigned for 52 years, and now he's gone. And Isaiah needed a little bit of lifting up, and he saw the Lord high and lifted up in the year that King Uzziah died. And I'm going to tell you something, friends. In all of this, and I know I'm not done with this, but in all of this, whether it was a good king or whether it was a bad king, whether it was a man who was good and he ruled and had problems, or whether it was a bad king who ruled and at times the Lord blessed the nation anyway, I want you to know that no matter what the circumstances look like, no matter who's in charge, no matter who leads the land, and no matter what any man on this earth does, it does not change one single covenant that God's ever made with His people. There is not a single man that has been in this line thus far that could have possibly undone or overthrown anything that God made to David as far as a covenant is concerned. So Ahaziah dies. His son is Jotham, a good king, reigns very well. Not a whole lot's mentioned about him other than he was a good king, and the nation had peace during this time. It does tell us that Jotham was not as good as David, his father. He ruled in many ways that were good, but not quite to the level of David. And then he has a son. And all this goodness comes to an end because his son is a man by the name of Ahaz. He, in my opinion, may have been the worst king that Judah ever had. Thank God he didn't reign very long. But he was so bad that not only did he undo everything that his fathers did, he reared up not only all the groves and idols that they had established, he brought in some more they hadn't had before. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he is the second king in Judah's line to be mentioned as one who offered his children in the fire to other gods. He was a very horrible man, very horrible king. And the kingship suffered, and the land suffered during this time. But when he died, he had a son. It's always amazed me that you have a good man that can have a rotten son for a king, and you can have a bad man who has a good son for a king. After this man Ahaz dies, his son Hezekiah takes the throne. And Hezekiah is unique in everybody that's come before him in this one sense. Hezekiah was not only a good king, he not only did that which was right in the eyes of the Lord, it says for the very first time that Hezekiah did that which was right in the eyes of the Lord, as did David, his father. For the very first time since David has left the throne and passed away, you finally have a king that's on the same level as David. I wonder why that is. I wonder why Hezekiah was on that level. Well, two things I think point us to that. Number one, not only did he remove idolatry, not only did he get rid of all the things that were troubling the land, he also removed some people in the land that the Bible uses a term for called Sodomites. He removed them from the land. Lord blessed him for that. But he also did something that none of his forebears did. None of his forebears had touched the high places. They had removed all the regular stuff. They had gotten rid of all of the idolatry that they had had going on. But the high places, the places you had to work to get to, they had sort of left been untouched. Generation after generation after generation. Hezekiah goes up to the high places and he cuts all those down. In other words, he wasn't interested in getting rid of just the easy idols. He wasn't interested in getting rid of just the small things, easy to get at. He took the time and the labor to try to remove all the idolatry out of the land. He took the time to make Israel or Judah just as clean and pure as it could be. And on top of that, once the idolatry was purged out of the land, he did something else as well. He found a book that had gone unused, a book that had gone just unaccounted for many generations. It was the book of the law of God. And for the very first time, in a very long time, they had worship. They had assembly. They had the reading of the law. They had the praise of God going forth in the temple and in His holy place. This hadn't happened since the days of David and the days of Solomon. I know in this present day in which we live, sometimes it feels like things are against us and things are pressing down. Can you imagine from Solomon, Abijah? I'm just going to use Old Testament names. Abijah, Asa, Jehoshaphat, Jehoram, just on down the line. Even 52 years of Uzziah's good reign, and it wasn't until Hezekiah took the throne that for the very first time in all that time, they had worship and they had God's service in the temple as they ought to have it. I tell you, Hezekiah was a good king. He did what none of his forebears had done. He not only got rid of all the idolatry, not just the low-hanging fruit, he got rid of all of it. But he also reinstituted the worship of God. He ordered things up, and he was a good light and testimony to his father David's house. Now, he didn't get everything right, and I don't have time to go into all of his faults, but friends, he was a very good king. And isn't it just the way it is? When he dies, here's a man who had a horrible father named Ahaz. And he has an absolutely horrible son named Manasseh. Manasseh rules longer than any king in Judah ever ruled. 55 years, and he was rotten. For 55 years, he undid what his father Hezekiah had done. For 55 years, idolatry was the order of the day. For 55 years, he had sons sacrificed in the fire. And the Lord bore with all these things. There's a promise that I'm intentionally leaving off that I'm going to get to that I want to show you how merciful God is. And Manasseh was so bad, he undid everything that Hezekiah did, And then his son, after him, because it says in back in the genealogy, it says Uzziah begat Jotham, and Jotham begat Achaz, and Achaz begat Ezekias, and Ezekias begat Manasseh, and Manasseh begat Amon, and Amon begat Josias, and Josias begat Jeconias and his brethren about the time they were carried away to Babylon. Finishing out this genealogy, Manasseh was a horrible king. His son Amon was also a horrible king. But thankfully, they had another shining moment right before the carrying away into Babylon. Hezekiah's great-grandson was a man by the name of Josiah. Children, I want you to listen up. No matter how young you are, no matter how small you are, no matter how unfit you may think you are for service, Josiah was 8 years old when he took the throne. He had the most horrible example of a father in Amon, an even more horrible example in his grandfather, Manasseh. There's no way he ever knew his great-grandfather, Hezekiah. He was already dead. And yet, Josiah, with no good example to follow, with no good upbringing for the first 8 years of his life, when he takes the throne for the second time, it says, "And he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, as did his father David." He did what Hezekiah did. He went in and he destroyed everything that Manasseh had made. He destroyed everything that Amon had made. He tore down that which his father and his grandfather built because it was a stench in the eyes of the Lord. And he did this all before and prior to reading the book of the law. And when he finally did read the book of the law and he saw all the curses that God had promised upon the land, he repents in sackcloth and ashes. And there is a prophetess over in a college named Huldah. And she sends word to him and she says, "King, because you were tender, because your hand was righteous, and because you did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, yes, this judgment is coming. But it's not going to come in your generation. It's not going to come in your time. In other words, your actions have prevented this curse for this time and for this generation. Do you realize that no matter what you think about your life and about your service, no matter how young you are or even how old you are, we have the ability given to us by faith that even when God has pronounced a curse upon a land, even when God has made an edict and a decree that a land is going to suffer judgment, we, by our actions today, can prevent that in our lifetime and prevent that in the lifetime of our children. I tell you, it's worth standing for because we shouldn't give up hope in what our Lord has given unto us." Here's Josiah, with no good example to follow, and he prevents captivity from coming for several more years. He reigns very well for 31 years. He's killed at a very young age in battle. It's a different story for a different sermon. But there were only three kings who, it says, were top shelf: David, Hezekiah, and Josiah. Just under them, I would put men like Solomon, men like Asa, men like Jehoshaphat, men of that caliber. And then under them, you had men who were okay, but not all that good, like Abijah and people like that. But then you had just horrible people: Jehoram, Ahaz, Manasseh, Amon, Jeconias and his brethren about the time they were carried into Babylon. I'm not going to talk about Jeconias. I'm not going to talk about Jehoiakim tonight because that plays a very big part in our next effort. But if you go through 1 Kings, 2 Kings, 1 Chronicles, and 2 Chronicles, every time there was a bad king, every time a king messed up, every time the land was plagued, and every time the land was in turmoil, when Rehoboam lost the first 10 tribes, and they were left with only Judah and Benjamin, every single time it says, "Nevertheless, the Lord would not suffer Judah to go under for the promise that He'd made unto David, that He would always have a light, that He would always have a king, that the Lord, even in the midst of man's transgressions, man's shortcomings, would not allow the kingdom to go under, would not allow His promise to go unfulfilled. And the Lord honored men because of His own covenant's sake, not because of their faithfulness and their character." Why is that so important? The reason that's so important, friends, is because David could not foresee how all of his sons would live. He couldn't foresee the next 14 generations. But just from what he saw in his own lifetime, here's what he said. He said, my house is not so with God. Would you agree with me, having gone through this, that David's house was not so with God? There's even a spot in the midst of that genealogy where you're like, if I go back and I read Kings, there's some people missing. And there's a reason there's some people missing. There was a time in the line of the kings of Judah when they had people reigning who weren't in the direct line. The line kind of did like this, and then it finally came back into course. Now, that's a whole other story for a whole other day. But friends, suffice it to say, through a bad king, through bad actions, through mistakes on every hand, God will not allow His covenant or His faithfulness to fail. There was even a time when they didn't think there was anybody left from David's line. The reason they thought that is because the last heir, this was during the days of Jehoram, he had gone and he had killed all of his brethren. He killed them all because he didn't want them to challenge him for the throne. So he has no brethren. And then of his seed that he has, most of them are killed. Most of them are killed by raiding parties, by other nations, by enemies. And then when Jehoram dies of a very vicious disease, it's actually, he calls him his son, but it's actually his uncle, Ahaziah, who reigns. And Ahaziah reigns 1 year. And when he is killed in battle, his mother, Athaliah, who's also the house of Ahab, she decides, well, my son's dead, so I'm going to take the throne. But instead of nurturing her house, you know what she does? She says, let's find out if there's anybody left that can challenge me for the throne, and let's kill all them too. Not just David's line, let's kill all the seed royal. Let's kill anybody of the house of Judah that has any possible chance to be on the throne. And she just murders and slaughters her entire family. And it was the faithfulness of one man, a priest, who hid a very small child by the name of Jehoaz, as he's sometimes called. And that little child was what spared the line of David and the house of Jesse from going under at the hands of Athaliah. My point in all this is that David's line should have been cut off time and time and time again, whether by their faithlessness, whether by judgment that had come upon them. They should not have had the kingdom anymore. And yet in all this, God would not allow His faithfulness to David to fail. Why is that? Because here's what David says about himself. He says, although my house be not so with God, yet He hath made with me an everlasting covenant, ordered in all things and sure. And he says, although He make it not to grow. David said, I understand that I have failed Him. I understand that I have let Him down. But I also understand that He is not going to allow His covenant to fail. He's not going to allow His covenant that He made with me. He said, it's ordered in all things and sure. You know what that means? That means that when God made this covenant to David, there was no chance that Christ would not be born at the appointed time, at the appointed place, to the appointed family in the house of David, because God had ordered it that way. Galatians 4 and verse 4 says, but when the fullness of time was come, God sent forth His Son, made of a woman, made under the law, to redeem them who were under the law. Friends, when Christ came, there were so many things that should have prevented that, not the least of which are these 13 or 14 kings. But friends, God's everlasting covenant will not and cannot fail. It is ordered in all things and sure. I tell you in 2020 today, that should give us hope. And that should give us consolation, because the very same covenant that He made with David, He has made with us as well. The very same principle that He's given unto David and the sure mercies of David's house, He's given to us as well. I realize that we are not of David's line. I realize we're not of the house of Judah or the house of Jesse of the tribe of Judah. But I certify to you that the king that reigned then and the king that reigned from David's house 2,000 years ago is the same king who reigns over this house today. His name is Jesus Christ. And He is the Lion of the tribe of Judah. And He has leaped upon His prey. And He has prevailed to open the book and to loose the seals thereof and redeem us back to God by His own blood out of every kindred, tongue, people, and nation. We have every reason to have hope today because our King is still on His throne. We may not have seen Him. We may not yet see the splendor of His majesty, but I certify to you that He is on His throne today. I certify to you He is still a man who is just,
who is ruling in the fear of God. He doesn't get anything wrong. He doesn't make a single mistake. He doesn't have a single slip in judgment. I tell you, there are times when we may wonder if our King knows. I made mention this morning, it shows that God right now in heaven is not overlooking, or He's not overlooking the things that are happening right now. He is not one who is just simply ignoring or just missing the things that go on. You know, there is a time when a king is on a throne, and whenever it's maybe an enemy invading the land, maybe it's oppression within the land, maybe it's a famine going on. There's so many things that can plague a land, and a king has to give those things his attention. You know, if he overlooks something, his people, his citizens will suffer. If it's a famine, they may starve. If it's an enemy, they may be overrun and killed. And there might be times when a king makes a decision and the people say, that doesn't seem like a good decision. You know, there was a time in David's life when there was an enemy that came against him. And I'm sure that David, from all the experience that he'd had in battle, this is in 2 Samuel chapter 5, from all the experience that he had in battle, I can imagine as a young boy who killed Goliath, as one who went out to battle and slew tens of thousands, and now upon the throne has led them time and time again through one successful campaign after another. I'm sure there were people who said, all right, this is a great enemy before us, but our king's here, and our king's going to see us through this. But you know what the Lord told him to do? He told him basically to retire from the field in the sight of his enemy. You know what that is in military terms? That's called a peaceful, orderly surrender. You're surrendering the ground. You're surrendering the field. You are having to basically draw back from land that you have fought to gain. The Lord tells him that to retire from the field, to draw back. And tells him to go around in the wood to a place against or beside their encampment and to basically wait. And what were they to wait for? He said, you wait until you hear the sound of a going in the tops of the mulberry trees. And when you hear the sound of the going in the tops of the mulberry trees, you up, you blow the trumpet, you lead the people into battle, for the Lord goeth before you, and He is fighting your enemies for you. And when they went and did as the Lord told them to do, they had a great victory that day. But friends, what do you think went through the mind of the common soldier who was on the ground, who said, I just fought for this yesterday. I fought for it the day before. My friend who's fought by my side died for this ground yesterday. And now I'm giving it back. Now I'm retiring from the field. What is my king thinking? And then we're going to sneak away through the woods to some place I don't even know where we're going. And when we finally get there, he just tells us to sit down and wait. You say, I'm not sure I'd be thinking that. We all would. Friends, whenever something doesn't make sense to us, we begin to question, what's going on? Why are we doing this? Why is this happening? I mean, we believe we have a king sitting on the throne who has all power, do we not? We believe we have a king sitting on the throne that has all knowledge, do we not? We believe we have a king sitting upon the throne who loves us with an everlasting love, do we not? And yet when bad things happen, what do? I tell you what I do far too often. I look up and I say, Lord, what happened? Lord, where'd you go? Lord, what are we doing? Why do you do that? I do. And David was basically doing what the Lord told him. But when he heard the sound of the going, whenever it was manifest, the Lord was among them and the Lord was in front of them, leading them in battle. They had a great victory. Friends, that was something that a king had to make a decision to do. You know, there's times in our life when even though the Lord has the power, the Lord doesn't act upon that power. There's times that when even though the Lord has the answer and the understanding, He doesn't give that answer and that understanding. Now, I don't always know why He does this, but friends, I've asked Him for a lot of things that I didn't get. Sometimes I asked Him for things that I shouldn't have anyway, and He knew I shouldn't have them anyway, and so He didn't give them to me. There are other things that I asked for when I really should have been asking for something else. You know, when I was in school, I asked the Lord to bless me to gain the knowledge I needed to gain to make it through the classes I had to make it through. Problem was, I forgot to ask for some wisdom to go along with that knowledge. And I gained the knowledge that I needed. But boy, I became a hot-headed, arrogant jerk during that time because I knew a lot, but it wasn't tempered with the wisdom that it needed to have. There's times, friends, when we may think that our king is not acting as he should. There's times when we think our king needs to make a decision. He needs to take action right now. But I certify to you that the man that is ruling in the fear of the Lord right now, he is just. And he is ruling in the fear of God. He is getting every decision right. Because the power that he has, it is doled out and it's displayed exactly as it ought to be. The wisdom that he has, it is applied exactly as it should be. And whenever we see him as he really is, and we have the understanding that we need to have, and we know him even as he knows us, we're going to understand how he thinks. We're going to understand how he operates. And I guess I'll just close with where we close this morning. It shows, when you think about what's happening in the world today, compared to what was happening in the days of a Ahaz, or a Jehoram, or a Manasseh, or any of these other people from David's house that was in such disarray. When you think about what you're going through, and you think about God's covenant and God's promise, God's not overlooking anything that's happening in this world. He didn't overlook a single wicked king. But I tell you what he was doing then, as he is doing now. In Acts 17, as Paul is preaching to some Greek philosophers on Mars Hill, he talks about the Lord looking down from heaven upon all the ignorance that is going on this earth. And in verse 30 of Acts 17, it says, "At the times of this ignorance God winked at, for he hath appointed a day in which he will judge the world in righteousness by that man whom he hath appointed, whereof he hath given assurance unto all men, and that he hath raised him from the dead." Here the Apostle Paul says that God is winking at the ignorance that is going on right now. When you look at the events of 2020, God's winking at those events. When you look at all those wicked kings, God was winking at those events. Why? Because he is just, he is ruling in the fear of God, and he is the man to whom God is appointed to judge the world in righteousness. And how is God winking at all these things? To wink at something means to look over all these things. You know, to look over something is not the same as overlooking it. To overlook it is either to ignore it or to miss it. To look over it means you see what's truly important. Have you ever seen when somebody is looking at a small little snippet of a picture and then the camera pulls back and you see the big picture and you're like, oh. You know, you look at this rock that somebody is standing next to and the rock looks really, really big. And then they pull back and the person standing at the base of a hill or a mountain and it's just one small little rock in the midst of this great big old rock. You ever seen something like that? You ever seen when they put the camera on our house or a spot, a state where we live, and then the camera pulls back and it shows the country, then it pulls back again and it shows the planet or the earth, then it pulls back again and it shows our solar system, then it pulls back again and it shows the Milky Way, and it's got to basically point and say, basically, here's your solar system. And then it pulls back and it shows what they know of the known universe, and they have to have an arrow that points and says, this is the Milky Way. That when you get into the Milky Way, you have to have an arrow that points and says, this is where you are. And then once you get to the solar system, they say, this is your planet. You know, you think about looking at the big picture. The things that are right here at us, the rock that we're looking at right now, may seem so big, it may seem so great, but God's looking over those things. God's looking past those things because the rocks of today do not prevent the promises of yesterday or prevent the execution of those promises tomorrow. God is still going to execute everything He promised to execute, and God's not in heaven right now worried about what's going on. God's not scared about what's going on. God's looking past all these things and seeing the day coming in which He's going to judge the world in righteousness. When all those wicked kings were ruling, what was He doing? He was winking at all that ignorance, looking past all that ignorance, knowing that this was the line by whom the king, the ultimate king, would come. And when that ultimate king came, and God has given us assurance that He raised Him from the dead, that king is still the same king of today who is still sitting upon the throne of his father David, and he is still just and ruling in the fear of God. Nothing in that line tainted a single promise that God made, because God still executed what He said He was going to execute in spite of what man did.
May I submit to you today that the land was a whole lot better off whenever a good king did what he was supposed to do? The Lord blessed the Jehoshaphats and the Hezekiahs and the Josiahs of Judah during their days because of their righteousness. And even though the Lord has made promises like the church always being here in this earth, the church will always see better days when we follow after the Lord in righteousness. Thank God His promise doesn't stand or fall upon us, but may we see good days in His house by holding on to these things and following after Him. You know, Hezekiah was a good king and a great king because he reinstituted worship. Josiah was a great king because he read in the law of the Lord what was coming and is able to prevent ultimate destruction from coming into the land right then. You know, I don't have a prophecy of what's going to happen to the United States of America. I have no idea. The Lord hasn't foretold us that we're going to be overcome by another nation. The Lord hasn't foretold us that the church is going to pick up stakes and move to other shores. I have no idea whether these things are or ever going to happen. But one thing I'm assured of is that if we hold on to God's promises today, we'll hold on to it for us and for our children's sake. We'll hold it as we should to go on to the next generation. It'll be up to the next generation to hold on to it like they should, but we can hold on to it and carry it forth for the next generation. I tell you, I'm not interested in trying to put my stamp and my signature on God's house. It's got His signature and it beats mine every day. I'm interested in holding on to what He's given to us and holding on to it faithfully. Because I know, like David, that my house is not so with God. But I thank God that, like David, He has made with me an everlasting covenant, ordered in all things and sure. And that's all my salvation. It's all my desire, though He make it not to grow. Friends, may it be our only desire, and may it be our hope and our salvation, that no matter what we see outside, what we see in our own house, like David, we can say, it is my hope and it is my desire that I have an everlasting covenant given unto me. God's covenant with us is still sure today, as sure as it ever has been. May we hold on to these things all the days of our life. Lord willing, there's only going to be about one sermon left in this series. And I knew that this sermon, if the Lord didn't bless, would probably be the driest of them all, because you have to go through a lot of kings to get to the very end. But I ask that you pray for me for the next sermon, because it is one of the hardest to explain. It's one of the most beautiful to see, but it's one of the hardest to explain. And I need grace and I need wisdom to be able to speak it and declare it in a way that people are able to understand. So I ask that you pray for me for that. And I hope tonight has been a blessing unto you and it hasn't been too dry. If it has, you give Him all the praise, honor, and glory. May the Lord bless you.